Good morning, everyone. Today's topic actually sprung out of a piece of feedback I got from last week's Shiur topic. I had uploaded a recording of the Shiur from last week about making a bracha on besamim and bracha on smells in general when a person no longer has a sense of smell. And a friend of mine reached out to me and he said, "Oh, it's funny that you mentioned this topic and you give a Shiur on this because I had a similar question last Pesach." This friend of mine had been suffering from COVID during that time. And one of his symptoms over Pesach was that he had almost completely lost his sense of taste. And so he wanted to ask his posek, what brachot am I supposed to make on the various foods that I'm going to be eating over Pesach? Do I make normal brachot, brachot hanenin? Am I able to eat maror at all? If maror is a bracha based around, or if maror is a mitzvah, I'm sorry, based around the experience of bitterness. And he got his psak, and we'll review that in a second. I actually don't know who his psak was from, but it matches the kinds of rulings that I've seen from other poskim. The other piece of feedback I got from last week's shiur was that, and we alluded to this, I think, at the end of our discussion last week, is that there are other examples of experiences that a person might have where you lose a certain sense and there'd be halakhic ramifications from that. So we discussed smell last week. People had asked about taste and if taste is different from smell. So that was sort of the beginning of my exploration of this topic. As I kept digging, I actually found that it went far deeper than I expected, and there are definitely unplumbed areas for us to continue learning about when we'll be finished today. But it will at least have an entree into the topic of brachot, when one loses a sense of taste, and in general, the idea behind brachot and what we're really making brachot on. So with those words of introduction, I'll start with the sources that we'll be working through. Now, the first piece of background, just to note, is that we'd actually seen one source that had raised for me this question already last week. It was a source quoted in the Beit Yosef from the Orchot Chaim, which is a sort of relatively lesser known Rishon, who had ruled the following. Sheyish omrim, she'afal pisha eino nehenem reyach, she'ein lo chush hareyach. Even if a person doesn't benefit from smell because they don't have a sense of smell, nonetheless, mevarich, they should still make a bracha on besamim or on other nice smelling things. She'afal pisha eino margish bareyach, even if he doesn't experience the smell, hana'a yeshlo, she'mechazik rosho v'gufo. He does have hana'a, in that the smell gives strength to his head and his body. It sort of fortifies him physically, even if he doesn't experience it on a sensory level. And that actually sort of lays out some of our issues for the discussion today. Usually we think of the bracha on smells as a bracha based on the subjective sensory experience of smell, the positive smell that we feel when we smell something nice. But the Orchot Chaim presents a perspective that it's not about the subjective, you know, smell experience. It's about, is it fortifying to your body? What, you know, actual tangible benefit does it give you? Even in the absence of like the sensory experience of it. And that ends up being a really important debate with regard to other brachot on food, for example. Just find one example that sort of lays out the two basic positions. And then we'll see some, you know, further indications in the Gemara and in the Rishonim. There's a passage in this Gemara in Chulin that's talking about the Isser of Eiver Min HaChai, of eating a limb, you know, cut from a live animal. And one version of the debate, and there are a few different presentations in that Gemara, but one version is as follows. Kiyata Ravin, when Ravin, you know, came to whatever Beit Midrash this discussion was happening in, he presented the following presentation. Chilko mi v'chutz pater. If you split it outside, you're exempt. What does this mean? So from the context of the sugya, it seems to mean the following. The idea in general is that in order to violate an isser with regard to eating certain kinds of ma'achalot asurot, forbidden foods, one has to eat a minimum shear, a minimum amount of those foods, a kezayit in most, you know, solid food circumstances. And that's the discussion of the sugya here. So you need a kezayit of Eiver Min HaChai in order to violate the isser of eating Eiver Min HaChai. So if you split the kezayit in two, you get two, you know, half olive sized pieces of Eiver Min HaChai, and you eat them separately, then pater. You would be exempt from the punishment from eating every minachai. There's a secondary prohibition called chazishir, which is even eating less than a kizayat amount of a forbidden food is usher as well, and that's a discussion for another time. But you'd at least be exempt from this punishment. Now, what happens if you put the kizayat into your mouth, then you bite it in two, you split it with your teeth, and then you swallow each half of the kizayat individually? The Gemara presents that as a machloket. Rabbi Yochanan amar chayev, v'Reish Lakish amar pater. One position holds it your chayev, one holds it your pater. And now the logic is really what we're interested in. Rabbi Yochanan amar chayev, harei nehene gerono b'kizayit. Rabbi Yochanan's position that your chayev is explained by the fact that your throat or your mouth, your palate maybe, is benefiting from the whole kizayit at once. Two half kizayit in your mouth is experienced as a single kizayit, and that hana'ah that you get is what generates the punishment and the prohibition of eating achalot asur, of eating forbidden foods. V'Reish Lakish amar pater. Reish Lakish, the other position, says that you're exempt from punishment. Achila b'me'av b'inan v'laka. Because the eating that one needs to do in order to violate the prohibition happens in one's, you know, in one's gut, for lack of a better term. And when you eat two half olive size amounts, each one is half of an olive size. It arrives in your stomach as half of an olive. And that's not sufficient to generate the prohibition and the punishment of eating every minachai. So this Gemara is one of many indications that Achron discuss about whether when we talk about eating in general and with various ramifications that we might have with regard to eating, are we more interested in the result of the eating in your stomach, in digestion, in your guts, or are you more interested in the garon, and what's happening in your mouth, in your throat, in your palate? And that ends up being a pretty essential machloket, you know, in that context in Chulin for the purposes of eating forbidden foods. And also we could raise as a potential debate in the realm of brachot. When one makes a bracha, is one making a bracha on food for the benefit that one experiences in one's throat, the taste, or the experience of eating, or is one making a bracha on once the food, you know, hits your gut, hits your intestines, fills you up? And those are two different kinds of hana'a, and they may have, you know, significant nafkaminas for our question in particular. What I mean by that is, if a person can't taste but still gets the, you know, either that full feeling or the nutrition of food, then that may be subject to the same kind of dispute. If we're interested in the hana'a that one experiences in one's mouth or in one's throat, then a person who doesn't experience that because they have no sense of taste might not make a bracha. If, however, we're interested in the hana'a of fullness, the hana'a of, you know, in your gut, and that's what generates the obligation to make a bracha on food, then perhaps we still make a bracha if a person couldn't taste. Our presentation today, and this is culled from a number of sort of contemporary presentations of COVID halacha, but we'll be looking at one in particular at the end, tries to bring a few different indications from different sugyot in Mesachet Brachot or in Hilchot Brachot about this question, about whether or not a bracha is made on the taste of the food, or exclusively on the taste of the food, or also on other aspects of benefit that we get from the food. So one set of sources that fleshes this out a little bit comes from Mesachet Brachot, and it raises it starts in the Mishnah and the following discussion in the Gemara. Hashotel mayim litzim'o. If a person drinks water to quench his thirst, mevarech shakoni abidvaro. Then he makes the bracha of shakoni abidvaro. Okay, that accords with our practice, drinking water to quench one's thirst. But the Gemara is interested in, we'll skip the rest of the mission for now, the Gemara is interested, okay, but why else would you drink water? What other purpose do we have in drinking water besides quenching your thirst? That's sort of the operative and dominant form of hana that we get from water. So the Gemara asks the question, la'apukemai, right? What are we trying to exclude? What other kind of drinking of water is relevant here such that you wouldn't make a bracha? And the Gemara answers, amar of idi bar avin, la'apuke leman dechankete umtza. It's to exclude a person who is choking on a piece of meat, something in their throat, and you're drinking water to clear your throat, to wash that out without benefiting from the water, or without quenching your thirst from that water. Okay. So based on this Gemara, it sounds a little bit like, well, I can't rule so clearly, but I could point out drinking for thirst sounds to me a little bit more like drinking for the purpose of the taste, the experience in the garon, in your throat and your palate, and less about the nutrition that the water gives you as a result. When you're drinking water because you have something stuck in your throat and you're not drinking it for the purpose of the hana in your throat, the thirst-quenching nature of it, says the Gemara, it seems that you would not make any bracha on it.
So what about people who, you know, for health reasons, will take like, you know, 8-9 cups of water a day? They're not drinking it because they're thirsty. You're drinking it because you're trying to, you know, keep your kidneys flushed out, whatever, so that it, you know, as something of a health thing. But it's definitely not to quench thirst.
Okay, so I'm glad you brought that up, actually. And this, I had expected when you started that question to be asking a slightly different question, which is, what if a person drinks water for the purpose, let's say, of swallowing a pill or some other, like, instrumental purpose? And there are strong indications, and, you know, this would be one of them, that when you're doing so, you wouldn't have to make a bracha on that cup of water if you're not really drinking it because you're enjoying it. Your question was a little bit different, and it's interesting. What if you're drinking water purely because you know it is nutritious or you know it is good for you, but you experience no subjective pleasure from drinking that water at all? It is not thirst-quenching whatsoever. So that's a good question. I think if I wanted to bring it back to the Gemara, I might say it'll depend on how we understand this idea of litsim'o, right? Is the idea of drinking water, because of thirst, to exclude the idea of drinking it just because you have something clogged in your throat, to say that it's about the subjective experience, the, you know, desire to quench your thirst and the experience of pleasure that you get as a result, in which case, in the situation behind your question, if you're not really getting that subjective, pleasurable experience, maybe not. Or do we read the Gemara and do we say, no, the idea is that we're using water for like an instrumental external purpose, like, you know, clearing something out of your throat. And that's what we're trying to exclude. But when you're drinking water for its, you know, I guess sort of inherent properties as part of drinking, quenching thirst or providing the fluid that you need to be healthy, then maybe you would make a bracha under such circumstances. I also could make a distinction and I could say, well, maybe your intention isn't what matters so much as the actual benefit that you're having. Meaning a person who drinks water for nutritious purposes still, you know, probably experiences, you know, their thirst being quenched. Unless we're talking about someone who's really like over drinking. And that would be its own question related to the analogy in with regard to food is called achila gasa. When you're eating too much food, at some point you're eating so much food that the food you're eating isn't, you're not even eating anymore. You're just forcing things down your throat into your stomach, but you can't really say that you're eating because your stomach is overfull. You might be able to hit a similar point by water. But short of that point, you might say that, look, you're getting the benefit and you're experiencing the thirst quenching this regardless of why you're drinking, and you might still make a bracha for that reason. All right, that's a great question. I wish I was able to definitively say, oh, here's a practical halacha answer. I don't feel confident saying so at this point. So building on this Gemara, Tosafot makes an important distinction and one that has a pretty far-reaching ramifications for our purposes. Our Gemara had talked about water, drinking water for thirst versus drinking water for having, you know, something stuck in your throat or clearing out your throat. And Tosafot says, V'davka mayim she'ein lo hana ki'im lishtot mayim litzim'o. This is true only with regard to water, because the only benefit you get from water is quenching your thirst. But the hana that you get from clearing out your throat isn't considered hana in the same way, right? Water provides a sort of inherent hana in being thirst quenching. That's the pleasure and the benefit that it gives you. And getting something out of your throat is sort of what I called before, like an instrumental function. You just happen to be using water for that purpose, but you're not really benefiting from the water in a direct sense. However, aval shar mashkim, shela'olam ha'guf nehaneh mehem b'chol inyan, with regard to other drinks that you benefit from regardless, not just about being thirst quenching, they're also both tasty and nutritious, then mevarech. Then you wouldn't make a bracha on such a thing. The afilu chanake umta, even if you're drinking, let's say, a cup of coffee because there's something stuck in your throat, it couldn't be a piece of meat. That would be, you know, there would be kosher issues involved if you drink milk in your coffee. Just tip my hand a little bit there. But if you drink any other drink, orange juice, let's say, to wash a piece of meat out of your throat, you'd still make a bracha on that according to Tosfot. Now, the question I'll raise, or the thing I'll point out, is according to Tosfot, are we motivated by the taste and the sort of, you know, a pleasurable experience in your garon, in your throat? Or are we motivated by your me'ayim, by what's happening, you know, sort of more internally in your gut? And I think, based on the words, shala'olam ha'guf neha'nemehen, that Tosfot's really focusing on the latter, that he's interested in the nutritional value or the experience of fullness in your gut that you get from drinking, let's say, a cup of juice or coffee or wine, and that motivates the bracha. And regardless of, you know, what you're experiencing in your throat, if you're choking on a piece of meat, you're probably not experiencing a great amount of pleasure from the drink anyway, but you're getting the nutrition when you swallow. So it doesn't really matter that you're drinking it for the purpose of clearing out a piece of meat. There is another section in Tosfot that I'll just allude to very briefly without looking at it in detail. He says a dispute about whether the discussion in the Gemara about making a bracha on drinking water for the purpose of clearing something out of your throat relates to a bracha rishona or a bracha achrona. And that's actually a question that we won't be able to delve into too deeply right now. But we do see this distinction in some poskim between a bracha rishona and a bracha achrona. We might say, for example, that a bracha rishona is motivated by the taste you experience while eating, but a bracha achrona is motivated more by the feeling of fullness. And the proof that I could point to for that is the idea of benching. The source for benching for Birkat HaMazon in the Torah is from the pasuk of Ve'achalta V'savata U'Birachta. You eat, you are full, you are soveya, and then you make a bracha. And perhaps you say that the feeling of fullness generates the bracha. And indeed, with regard to benching, the mitzvah on a biblical level of benching only applies when it's really full. So maybe brachot achronot are motivated by this feeling of fullness, as opposed to brachot rishonot that might be motivated by the taste that you're experiencing. So there may be some reason to make such a distinction. And Rav Amram Gaon might make such a distinction, but other Rishonim don't necessarily rule that way. And indeed, Shulchan Aruch concludes, if you drink water, you know, shata mayim v'ha'avir ha'umtza, inu mevarech lo lefanav v'lo la'acharav. It doesn't really matter which bracha we're referring to. According to the Shulchan Aruch's conclusion, if you drink water to clear your throat, you're not going to make a bracha before or after. Excuse me. We'll just look briefly at the Mishnah Berurah, who mostly reiterates the things that we've seen in Tosfot. But Mishnah Berurah's language is a little bit different. He focuses on the chayk, which is the palate. So when he says, what is the language he uses? We'll look at the first Mishnah Berurah first. The Shulchan Aruch had ruled that if you drink water for thirst, you make a bracha. And the Mishnah Berurah says, Nira delav dafka litzimo mamish. It doesn't just mean when you drink water for quenching your thirst, you know, quite literally. Ella bistama kol shechich nana mehamayim mistama hu tzameksan. So long as you're benefiting at all from your drinking, we could assume that you were at least a little bit thirsty. That might also go back to Elizabeth's question, the question of drinking water for you know, for nutritious value. Well, as long as you're drinking and as long as you feel like you're, you know, able to drink and you're benefiting somewhat from it, we can assume that you're at least a little bit thirsty. And being a little bit thirsty is enough to generate a bracha. Because you wouldn't enjoy drinking, your palate wouldn't appreciate it if you weren't thirsty at all. So the standard of what counts as quenching thirst is its own standard. And then the second Mishnah Berurah is the one that's a little bit more important because he veers away very slightly from Tosfot's formulation in a way that might be significant. He says, he makes the same point Tosfot makes, davka mayim, that we're only talking about water in this halacha. But then he says, "Shein hachich na'ana mehen." Tosfos uses the language of the guf, which I thought, you know, one could argue seems to allude more to the sort of nutritional value or the experience in your gut as opposed to the experience on your palate. But the British Bura focuses on your palate, and that seems to be the dominant feature for him. So it's possible that might be a machloket between the Tosfot and the British Bura about whether we're focusing more on the, you know, on the garon or more on the me'ayim, more, you know, the internal, the intestines, the gut, or more on the taste. Excuse me. Speaking of water. Okay. So that's one indication that we see about our question, about whether we're more interested in the palate or in the gut for this purpose. We'll skip some of these sources and try to perhaps return to them when we finish. There's one other indication, one other machloket that is cited, and that's cited in the presentation from Rav Zilberstein that we'll see towards the end, about the bracha that we make on oil, if we consume oil. So the Gemara, you know, starts with the discussion elsewhere in Brachot. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, V'chein Amar Rav Yitzchak, Amar Rav Yochanan. Shemen Zayit, Mevarchen Alav Borei Pri Ha'etz. If a person drinks olive oil directly, they would make a Borei Pri Ha'etz. The Gemara asks the question, Heichi Dami. What situation are we referring to here? Ile Medikash Shatile. If we're just talking about a case where you drink it straight, usually, you know, pour a cup of olive oil and consume it. Ozuke Mazikle, says the Gemara. Drinking oil directly is dangerous. And therefore, does it make sense to say that you'd make a bracha, borei pri ha'etz, on that oil? And so the Gemara goes on to offer other interpretations of what we're talking about. Maybe it's about having oil on bread, and there you make a bracha. And the Gemara continues to flesh out that discussion of oil. I'll also note, I'm not sure, I don't have the background to say whether, by contemporary medical standards, drinking cups of oil is considered beneficial, is considered dangerous. If it is dangerous, why it would be considered dangerous? But the working assumption of the Gemara is that it is dangerous, and that's what's important for our purposes. And so, according to this Gemara, and indeed this is the way it seems to make sense in the conclusion of the Gemara as well, one wouldn't make a bracha on drinking a plain cup of oil. Rashi, you know, explains or adds, azuke mazik legufe, it is harmful to your goof, it is unhealthy. And this isn't the kind of achila that warrants a bracha. The kind of achila that is damaging to you doesn't justify brachot. And so if a person were to, you know, to choose a more extreme example, if a person were to consume poison for some reason, that would also not justify making a bracha. That would also justify hopefully someone making sure that one is taking care of oneself, both in their physical and mental health, but it would not justify making a bracha. And that seems to be Rashi's conclusion, that you really don't make a bracha on drinking oil. The Rambam, however, rules, aval im shata hashemen levado, if a person does drink oil directly, o shelo hayachashesh choshesh begrono, and this relates to the discussion later in the Gemara that we skipped over for the purpose of time, mevarech ala shahakol, the Rambam adds that you don't make a borei pri ha'etz on a cup of plain olive oil, but you would make a shahakol according to the Rambam. Why? Well, he tells you why you wouldn't make a ha'etz. He says, Shaharei lo nehena b'ta'am hashemen. If you benefited from the taste of the oil and it wasn't considered, you know, dangerous in that way, then you make a borei pri ha'etz. But if not, you make a shahakol b'dvaro. The Rambam seems to think that's not based on the ta'am, it's not based on the taste, because he says there is, you don't benefit from the taste of the oil when you drink it plain. So it must be that the Rambam thinks that you're benefiting from the hana'ah of having consumed the oil, the benefit in your me'ayim that you experience, and that generates a bracha of shakoni adivaro. Whereas Rashi and most Rishonim who don't rule like the Rambam and who don't say that you make a bracha on a plain cup of oil, seem to think that we're less interested in the hana in your me'ayim, in your gut, and more interested in the hana in your garon, in your mouth, and in the taste that you experience. And so it's possible that we now have a similar machloket to the one we saw before between Rashi and Rambam as well, where Rambam thinks that hana in your gut justifies a bracha, whereas Rashi might not think so. Okay, there are further indications in some of these other sources about what we're interested in. Are we interested more in the gut or more in the palate? But we'll skip those for now, just to know that is that machloket. And that seems to be the basis for every subsequent discussion that we see in our contemporary poskim about making a bracha when you can't taste. For most poskim, this seems to be the dominant debate, right? Are we interested in the karon? Are we interested in the me'ayim? Let's cite many, many indications from various sugyot and various rishonim one way or the other. And then we'll, you know, issue whatever conclusion that we reach. And we'll see that when we look at the conclusions of some of the contemporary poskim. I do want to diverge right now just to refer back to the initial question that I had gotten on last week's shiur, which had to do with maror and this psak that a friend of mine had received about making a bracha on maror. So the Gemara in Pesachim with regard to maror rules as follows. Amar Rava, bala matza yatsa. Nice, almost poetic. It rhymes a little bit there. If one swallows matzah, seemingly like without really tasting it, sort of swallowing it whole or sort of putting it down your throat without experiencing it, yatsa, you have fulfilled your mitzvah of eating matzah. Bala maror, however, if you swallow maror without tasting it and giving it time to, you know, live on your palate for a little bit, lo yatsa, you have not fulfilled your mitzvah. And, you know, for good measure, the Gemara says, bala matzah umaror, if you swallow both, then you fulfill your mitzvah matzah, but not your maror. I mean, you can't like sneak the maror in with the matzah. As long as you're not tasting the maror, it seems, or as long as you were putting the maror, eating the maror in such a way that you're not tasting it, and that's potentially an important distinction, you don't fulfill your mitzvah. And there's a certain kind of intuitiveness behind this that's articulated by the Levush, but seems to be articulated by many others as well, that the mitzvot of matzah and maror are fundamentally different. The Levush articulates it clearly here. Delo dami achilat matzah la'achilat maror. Eating matzah and eating maror are different kinds of mitzvot. De'achilat matzah, aval gav shehi zecher le'geula v'cheirut, yikol makom ikar achilata, hi la'achol lisboa lemalei et kresho kishu ra'ev. Even though the purpose of eating matzah is a zecher le'geula, it's a reminder of our redemption and our freedom from Mitzrayim, nonetheless, the mitzvah is defined as a mitzvah of, you know, eating and being satiated when you're hungry. You're supposed to eat matzah and be full. And the reason that you're supposed to consume matzah and become full because of it is because of our redemption, our freedom from Mitzrayim. However, maror, of all achila maror, inu lemalei hakeres. It's not about, you know, filling your stomach. Ela zecher levayamar ruet chayehem. It is a remembrance to the bitterness of our slavery in Egypt. It is a remembrance to the bitterness of our slavery there and the work that they that Mitzrayim had imposed upon us. In Cain, heyach yatza bivliya. How could you possibly fulfill your mitzvah of eating maror by just swallowing it whole? Ve'eno margish tam hamarirut shu zecher levayamararu. When you're supposed to be experiencing the bitterness, how could you fulfill the mitzvah when you're eating it in a way that you can't experience the bitterness? Therefore, lefichach b'maror eino tzarech b'vliya t'ta'am maror b'ino. You need to consume maror in a way where you experience the taste of bitterness that is relevant to the maror. And so the psak that my friend got was along these lines, that because you're not a person who, at the time, he was unable to taste the maror, so he really shouldn't, really, he probably isn't fulfilling the mitzvah maror at all. Certainly, he shouldn't make a bracha on it. What he did is he had his wife eat maror and make the bracha on his behalf, and he entered the bracha just in case, potentially, there are ways to justify eating maror and fulfilling the mitzvah that way. But sort of essentially, he didn't think it made sense to eat maror with a bracha as part of the mitzvah of Pesach. So maror seems to be an example of a mitzvah where we really are much more interested in taste as a factor, whereas it's possible that for other mitzvot, like matzah, or for brachot in general, we're more interested in the fullness, what the Levush calls limalei et kreso, filling one's belly. And that seems to be what generates either mitzvah of matzah or brachot in general. Okay, I'll pause now to, again, drink water for the purpose of satisfying my thirst, and then we'll continue with there's a few of the contemporary articulations, halacha lamaisa. That's quite nice. I always enjoyed learning about brachot. I find I appreciate, at least for the moments that I'm teaching, my food and drink a little bit more. It's quite nice to have that excuse to appreciate that. Okay, so we'll see a few of the contemporary presentations. Some of you who've been around for multiple shiurim may have noticed that I've been quoting from a few svarim in particular pretty frequently. That have been much more thorough svarim. So Ituri Mordechai is one of them that presents much more thorough presentations of a lot of issues and is really, you know, sort of hundreds of pages in length. Hevyani Hanarav also I had quoted, and that's where we're going to be looking at our final presentation today. excuse me. And so so we'll be seeing some of those, and those end up being helpful for some of the topics that are not addressed in like standalone presentations in other proscam, but are important and are relevant and end up getting discussed in these like very large volumes that have come out. So Ituri Mordechai is one, and he presents the view as follows. Nechlechu ha-poskim b'chole shelo margish ta'am b'ma'achal, ha'im yivarech bracha rishona al hanat hasviya, o shelo yivarech kivan she'en lo hanat garam. Right, he picks up on the machloket haposkim, and that we had seen, you know, the beginnings of inklings of in the Gemara and Rishonim, about whether we're interested in the hana of fullness or in the hana in your taste. V'yesh lahoro. So, what do we do with that machloket, given that it is a machloket that exists? V'yesh lahoro lemase sheyavarich bracha rishona al hana atmeav. He thinks that halach lemaisa we should paskin that you make a bracha even on the fullness that you feel after eating, and on the hana in your gut as a result. And therefore, even if you can't taste food, you still make a bracha, a rishona, and presumably a bracha achrona on it, though he's not explicit about that point. Amnam galel haseder, im yochal maror v'lo yargishum ta'am, lo yavarech, kamo shabala maror lo yatza. However, on the seder night, based on what we've seen about the purpose of swallowing maror and the fact that you don't make a bracha on that and you're not fulfilling your mitzvah in that way. So too, if you can't taste the maror, even if you're eating it normally, you would not fulfill the mitzvah and you wouldn't make a bracha on it. And he says that same ruling in the name of Rav Nasha Klein as well. You make a bracha on the svia, but not on the maror for this reason. Point out, and I didn't say this in full, but Rav Asher Weiss in Minchat Asher rejects the comparison between the idea of swallowing maror and eating maror when you can't taste it. He thinks that they're fundamentally different, because when one swallows maror, it's not only that one isn't tasting the maror, it's also a fundamentally different form of eating, right? There's eating normally, where you experience whatever you experience, where you chew and swallow food, and you have normal eating process. And that kind of eating generates a bracha of maror, even if you happen to not be able to taste it. Swallowing is a totally different kind of eating. You aren't really eating in the same way. Maybe you'll even say you're not really eating at all if you're not eating in a way that could normally generate the pleasurable taste experiences that we have when we eat food. And so swallowing doesn't count as a mitzvah of maror, but perhaps eating normally, even if you happen to not be able to taste the food that you're eating, might suffice for the purpose of fulfilling the mitzvah of maror. So Rav Asher raises that possibility. I think he ends up concluding as well that you don't make a bracha on maror. And we'll see that here in this presentation. Right, that you do make a bracha rishona on what you eat. We call back here, Pashat Be'enai, Shachol Azeh Yivarech Bracha Rishona Al Kol Achilato. You make a bracha on food, no matter what you're eating, because you're still getting the hana in your gut. But for bracha mitzvah, you don't make a bracha on maror, even if you would on matzah, for the reason that we mentioned. So he's not necessarily so confident in his distinction between those two different explanations of eating maror when you can't taste or swallowing maror. But he ends up with the same conclusion that we've seen. He also makes a sort of, I would say, like a slightly less formal argument and we see this sometimes in a rush or vice in general. I think it's interesting to bring up in our conversation. This would be a great like wonder. Lomar she isha machmat machal eino margish tam b'machal lo yavarech ala ochel kol yemei chayav. It would be very strange if a person couldn't taste and therefore would never make brachot on food. This person eats and is full and is, you know, satisfied by his eating. But wouldn't actually be thanking God for the food that he ate. So this is a little bit less of a formal argument, but one that I think is religiously resonant, that when you're eating and you're benefiting from the world and you owe God your gratitude for that, so to be in a position where you can't express that gratitude and you don't make any brachot on the food that you're eating is itself something that Rosh Hashanah is inclined to push against as a sort of religious value in this discussion, right? We don't want to be in a position where there are people who can't make brachot hananin because this very, you know, principled idea of making a bracha when you benefit from the world is one that is a little bit too important for him. We'll actually stop here. Actually, I'll very briefly just share my screen just to show you this sefer that I've been using. I have it in PDF format. It's been made available, called Hadiyani Chadarav. Those of you who are looking at my screen now see that it is 632 pages long. It's broken up into sections. It starts off with a sort of general, halacha and sort of, list form. You have a halacha, you have some footnotes that flesh it out. And then in the latter half of the book, you have more fleshed out articles and analyses by various rabbanim and poskim on some of these questions. So this is an area where, most COVID-related questions that have come up, at least that had come up by the time that this book had been put together, have been addressed in this context. So one of them is the one that we've seen about maror and brachot more generally. We see a treatment by, one second, there we go. No, this isn't the right one. So this is a very short two-page presentation from Rav Zilberstein about making a bracha on Brachas Hananin. He actually only deals with maror as an aside. He actually uses maror to prove a claim about brachot in general. The fact that the discussion about making a bracha on matzah and maror only revolves around whether you make the bracha on the mitzvah of maror, it must be you're making a bracha on the consumption itself. You must be making a bracha of hamotzi, let's say, on the matzah. The only question is, are you going to make a alechi matzah and fulfill your mitzvah of eating matzah in that way? So we use that as a proof in the direction of making a bracha on hanat tzviya, much like we've seen in the other postgame as well. But it's always worth looking at this book and seeing what kind of literature has come out, as opposed to these one-page tshuvot that we've seen. This is a much thorougher attempt at treating COVID halacha-related issues. I just saw a question in the chat. Let's see. What do you do when you're at someone's home and they're a terrible cook and you hate their food? Do you say a bracha on food you're forcing yourself to eat to be polite? Great question. Please God, it shouldn't be relevant so often. And you should have friends who are also good cooks. Based on what we've seen so far, it seems like the contemporary ruling would be that one would make a bracha, right? The posting that we've seen so far have all leaned to the direction of making a bracha on the experience in your gut and the fullness and the nutrition that you get from the food as opposed to the taste of the food itself. There might be a question it's worth raising if the food is actually inedible. It's possible you might even reach the point where it wouldn't be considered food whatsoever. I like to think that that kind of question won't come up so often when you're being served a meal at someone else's house. But if it is, it might become a more relevant question. If you could say it's not even really food anymore, it's a burned hockey puck instead of a burger, let's say. So maybe you'll make such a distinction, but it would be very hard for food to reach that category. I can't imagine most food reaching that point. So just to summarize what we've seen so far, or not so far because we're about to wrap up, but we had seen this sort of initial question about whether, with regard to brachot that we make on food in general, or if we're interested in the fullness, what's called the hanat me'ayim, or in the hanat garon, the expulsion in your throat or in your palate. We've seen various indications from the Rishonim and from Poskim in both directions to that point, whether we're interested in the experience in your throat or in the nutritional value that comes from that. We also saw that the contemporary sort of conclusion seems to focus much more on the fullness, and that seems to motivate most Poskim in their conclusion. We also briefly looked at the question of maror and whether there are certain kinds of a mitzvah, certain kinds of food, where we're really more interested in the taste than in the fullness that you experience. And maror seemed to be an example where we're much more likely to be interested in the taste than in the fullness. And if you can't have the taste, then perhaps one would not make a bracha on maror. And that did seem to be the ruling that the poskim that we've seen at least have issued. I'm going to stop the recording, but happy to stay on for any further observations or thoughts.